Hey, it's John Engle, and I'm excited to share that registration is now live for Grid Tech Connect Forum California. Join us in Newport Beach, June 24th through the 26th for the Interconnection event. We're bringing together utilities, developers, regulators, and advocates to take on one of the biggest challenges facing the energy transition, both at the DG and utility scale levels. Click the link in the episode description and use promo code PODCAST to save 10% on admission. Join our partners from the Department of Energy, NREL, Southern California Edison, PG&E, CAISO, Sunrun, NG, Convergent, AES, and so many more for this impactful event. We'll see you there. Hello and welcome to another episode of This Week in Clean Tech, a roundup of the week's biggest stories you need to know in climate and clean energy in 15 minutes or less. Today is Friday, March 29th, 2024. I'm Renewable Energy World Editor-in-Chief John Engle. Kelly Livingston from ABC will be joining us shortly. That's the big time, Mike. We're getting there. I'm joined once again by Clean Tech PR veteran Mike Casey of TigerCom, who is especially spicy today, if I should recap our green room experience before recording. I don't know what's gotten into you, but how's your week been going?
It's awesome. I want you to know, John, we had a listener, John Kristen, say that we are the car talk of energy podcasts.
Oh, wow. That dates at least you. I think car talk ended before I got into radio, so I'm safe.
All right. Well, back when covered wagons were crossing the prairie and I was 10 years old, that was actually a show.
I love Car Talk. Car Talk is great.
It's a compliment. Take the win, John.
Yeah, I will. We also want to thank our listeners for giving us that feedback on which 30-year-old, 40-year-old show on the radio, on the AM waves that we compare to. Send those thoughts to rew@clarionevents.com and also let us know what stories caught your eye and nominate those clean techers of the week, which we will get to at the end of the show. Okay, Mike, get us started.
Alan Rappaport of the New York Times has a story. Yellen warns China against flood of cheap green energy exports. John?
The Biden administration is concerned that China's subsidized clean energy exports are destabilizing global markets, hurting firms and workers around the world. I think in the last few weeks, I saw some solar module prices coming out at like 10 cents a watt, which is just insane. On Wednesday, Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen said she plans to raise the overcapacity issue with her Chinese colleagues when she visits in the coming weeks. She argued that it's risky and bad for American firms and workers to have one country dominate global supply chains around solar, EVs, and lithium-ion batteries. It should come as no coincidence, Mike Casey, that the moratorium on Southeast Asian imports of the tariff moratorium expires in June. So that's a headline we should all be watching out for as we march towards summer. Mike, what do you think?
I think that this is exactly what the IRA was designed to do. And despite the carping of retiring Senator Joe Manchin, we should recognize that it was to begin the process of easing China's grip on the dominance of these supply chains. So she was at Suniva's solar cell factory in Georgia. It's been shuttered due to competition from dumped Chinese panels, but it's now been reopened thanks to the IRA. So that's a big win. Nonetheless, China filed a complaint on Tuesday to the World Trade Organization about the law's electric vehicle subsidies. All right, John, story number two.
All right, this one's from Kate Aronoff from the New Republic. She wrote a story, oil executives are getting refreshingly honest these days. Mike, what do you think of their honesty?
All right, here we go.
No!
All right.
Okay, it's back.
The no pen is totally back. John, I've written about this before. There's an ailment called smart guy's disease. This is when intelligent people are knowledgeable about one field of human endeavor, and then they assume that their intelligence makes them instantly knowledgeable about all other fields. Amin Hassan Nasser, the latest exhibit of this. So he's the CEO of Aramco. You clearly don't get to be in that position unless you're intelligent. That's clear. But according to Mr. Nasser's master class in bro-splaming and amateur climatology sleuthing, you, me, and all of our listeners are failing in real time, except we're not. We're growing into competitive threat to Mr. Nasser, and I can tell you from 20 years in competitive combat sports that this huffing and puffing is a sound of someone who is scared. But I'll tell you who is failing. It is Mr. Nasser. He's failing everyone on this planet by deluding himself into thinking he knows something about the climatology that the people producing that science don't. But of course, he doesn't know that. The climatology is clear. We are on a crash course with a very bad future if we don't course correct, which all of us on this show and listening to it are trying to affect. So I'm reminded, therefore, of the ancient wisdom from Confucius. Those who say something is impossible should not interrupt those who are doing it. Translated for our modern listeners, if you can't help with what's necessary, shut up. Over for a more diplomatic response, John Lindell.
Well, I'll just add that this is basically our recap of CERAWeek, which is the, you know, the big gathering of energy executives and the clean energy and climate folks get cast off into a small auditorium while the big oil guys get to clink glasses and celebrate their wins. And I think what you're referencing too is Nasser saying that the energy transition is or decarbonization is failing to gain any momentum, something like that, which is a foolish statement, obviously. And I think it was interesting. BlackRock CEO Larry Fink came out, I think yesterday or the day before, saying, oh no, the energy transition is often running. We're still going to invest in oil and gas because we need it now. And you can criticize him for that. But he is very much admitting that this is the train has left the station on the energy transition. So get with it or get out. So here, just some more context here. 30% of oil, 50% of gas, and 80% of coal reserves must remain in the ground if we want to limit global warming to 2 degrees Celsius. Yet last week, Shell and BP both announced they will scale back their plans to reduce emissions. Darren Woods wants to decarbonize through carbon capture and storage, a future where ExxonMobil can continue extracting and selling as much fossil fuel as possible. When they tell you something, believe them, Mike. I think that is that the message here? Mike Casey, story number three.
Ari Natter with Bloomberg. U.S. announces $6 billion to clean up heavy manufacturing. Mr. Engel.
Yeah, the White House announcing $6 billion in grants for 33 projects that will help cut pollution from hard to decarbonize industries such as aluminum, cement and concrete, chemicals, iron, steel, and food and beverage. The funding will be allocated toward the first new U.S. aluminum smelter in 45 years. This will revive declining aluminum production used for solar panels, semiconductors, and defense applications, and bring in about 1,100 new direct jobs to the United Steelworkers. Mike, your thoughts?
Rebecca Dell from ClimateWorks was on the podcast of one of our first guests, David Roberts, who holds Volts. She called this, quote, the most important thing that's ever happened in the history of industrial decarbonization, end quote. Biden administration says this grant will eliminate over 14 million metric tons of carbon pollution annually, equal to 3 million gas-powered cars. These grants allow steelmakers to make steel using hydrogen and electric melting furnaces. And other large corporations such as Kraft Heinz can now electrify their facilities as well. John, our fourth story.
Yeah, from the New York Times titled, The Last Coal-Fired Power Plants in New England Are to Close. Mike.
I'm not going to pull out the no pen on this because this is a good thing.
This is a yes pen. You don't have a yes pen? You didn't order the yes pen?
Why don't you get the yes pen?
I'm not a yes guy. I think that's become painfully apparent after 30 or so episodes that I'm probably more the no pen guy than you are.
That's true. All right. Yeah. I'm going to send you one. All right. Okay. New England's last two coal plants, Merrimack and the Schiller stations in New Hampshire, are set to close by 2025 and 2028, respectively. They will be converted into solar farms and battery units that will store electricity generated from wind turbines off the Atlantic coast. In the last few years, the two coal plants have only operated intermittently during peak periods, but this is what the energy transition should look like, my friend. John, what do you think?
You know, comparing us to Car Talk, those guys were crazy.
Well, I didn't want to say anything, John, but I have been noticing kind of I have been noticing a little bit more erratic behavior from you, but I've been trying to gloss over it, and let's keep the secret between us.
I have really been throwing my integrity out the window and doing this partnership with you. So just to round out this story number four, the agreement resolved a lawsuit from the Conservation Law Foundation and the Sierra Club about the hot water the plants were discharging into a nearby river. 20 years ago, New England got more than a fifth of its electricity from coal. It's been a remarkable turnaround. And it's great to see just how much of that old coal infrastructure is being put to use in powering the clean economy, as we see with these closures. All right, Mike, our fifth story and our guest for this week, who has been contemplating her decisions while on the sidelines as she listens to this rambling session.
As so many of our guests do, she's wondering how she can bring adult supervision here. But Kelly Livingston of ABC produced a story, new EPA vehicle standards would cut U.S. emissions, ramp up pressure for more EVs. Kelly, welcome. Thank you for coming on. For people who haven't seen or read the piece, what's the big takeaway?
Sure. So the big takeaway is that last week, the Environmental Protection Agency finalized some new vehicle emission standards for vehicle models years 2027 through 2032. And those years are going to reduce the average allowed emissions across a manufacturer's entire fleet. So think your Fords, your Stellantis's, your GMs. So there are different ways for manufacturers to come into compliance with different combinations of fully electric vehicles, hybrids, and your internal combustion engines. And the impact is going to be that by 2032, more than half of new cars sold in America are going to be electric. And all of this is happening during an election year where there's already been a lot of contention over the future of U.S. auto manufacturing.
Yeah, and Kelly, President Trump says he would scrap that in day one of his second term should he get elected. But how much does this put in motion already? Or is it are we kind of in this limbo stage of, like, we might as well see what plays out in November before making any, you know, multi-billion dollar investments?
So my understanding is that the administration has tried to, the Biden administration has tried to insulate this rule as much as possible. They've tried to get it out ahead of the Congressional Review Act deadline so that it's not subject to review from an incoming administration. And they've tried to make it so that the auto manufacturers are coming along with them on this, so there's less likely to be a challenge to this rule.
Hey, Kelly, in your reporting, did it leave you thinking the transition to EVs is underway and roughly doing well, or do you think it's stalled and troubled? I'm really interested in how people who come into this space and do a piece, what's their general impression they leave with?
I mean, I think if you take this administration's word for it, the future is electric. And that's what they're pushing for. That's what they're heading toward. I think with the rules and regulations they're putting in place, I don't see that not happening. But, you know, if the political turntables change in November, it's possible that that could change as well.
Any immediate, like, political reactions to this, Kelly, on either side beyond President Trump that we should be watching out for, congressional leadership? But does it feel like, again, for now, you know, this ruling is in place? It is clearly in line with the Biden administrative's goals and motives. And if the industry is coming along with it, that seems like a really promising step here. But I'm wondering, is there any other threat that we should be on the watch for?
Not that I'm aware of. I haven't heard any big opposition to this rule or this new set of standards, apart from opposition from former President Trump, who had come out ahead of the announcement saying that he's not a fan of President Biden's plan for electrification. So that's not a surprise. I'm not aware of any other big political names who are upset about this. And the fact that the auto manufacturers, as you said, are on board with this, I think bodes well for this rule sticking.
John, we're just about out of time. I think we need to go to our clean ticker of the week.
This week's Clean Ticker of the Week goes to Michael Takabe, Chief Operating Officer, and Hayat Badane, Engineering Lead at Kubik, an African-based startup. They make building materials out of recycled plastic for affordable, sustainable, and easy-to-deploy homes, clinics, and warehouses. Their construction materials reduce 5 times less carbon pollution than traditional materials, so congratulations to both of them.
I think Michael and Hayat should get Clean Ticker of the Year for this. It's so cool and amazing on so many levels. They're basically solving plastic waste and a housing shortage at the same time. So get after it, you two. I want to give a shout out to our terrific producer, Brian Mendez, and Claire Quirin and Alex Peterson for helping gather these stories this week.
And thanks to Kelly Livingston from ABC for joining us on This Week in Clean Tech and putting up with us. Please subscribe, give us feedback, and share your story recommendations. You can also read all those articles we discussed this week by clicking the links in the episode description. And we will see you next time.
Thank you, John. Thank you, Kelly. Take care.
Thanks, guys.
Hey, it's John Engel, and I'm excited to share that registration is now live for Grid Tech Connect Forum California. Join us in Newport Beach, June 24th through the 26th for the Interconnection event. We're bringing together utilities, developers, regulators, and advocates to take on one of the biggest challenges facing the energy transition, both at the DG and utility scale levels. Click the link in the episode description and use promo code PODCAST to save 10% on admission. Join our partners from the Department of Energy, NREL, Southern California Edison, PG&E, CAISO, Sunrun, NG, Convergent, AES, and so many more
for this impactful event. We'll see you there.